SB Nation and Underdog Dynasty present the Underdog Podcast.
And welcome back to another edition of the Underdog Dynasty Podcast, AAC edition. My name is Dan Morrison. That's Emily Van Buskirk. How are you doing today, Emily?
I am learning that hangovers in your 30s last for a long time. And it's a sobering experience.
I'm decidedly in my mid-20s. Like, I turned 25 on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And
This Wednesday or next Wednesday?
November 24th. Yep.
Oh my God, it's birthday week.
Yeah. Oh yeah. So, but what that means is my birthday is the Wednesday before Thanksgiving this year, which is already a stupid bar night. And it means my Thanksgiving morning is going to be awful. And someone's going to try to drag me to like a high school football game, and I'm not going to be about it.
A high school football game? What? You mean like a turkey bowl?
Yeah, a turkey bowl game.
Okay.
They're all high school around here.
Okay.
My town's like Facebook group for the town's already complained because the town we used to play every Thanksgiving decided they wanted to play the other school in their town, like it was the high school, and they wanted to play like the comprehensive school in the town. It was like, and everyone's still complaining about it. I'm like, this was like 4 years ago they changed this. Like, please get over it. It feels sad at this point.
God bless town Facebook groups.
I hate them so much.
They're so funny though.
I probably would have left my town's Facebook group if I hadn't deleted the app off my phone entirely because I don't like looking at Facebook.
There's a guy on TikTok. I forget his name. It's like Anthony something. And he goes and reads. Like, he started with his, I think he's in New Jersey and that's where they were. It was really funny. But now he'll like read random Facebook group threads and groups like that. Yeah. And he finds the funniest things.
Oh,
it's hilarious.
Yeah, they can be very funny. Sometimes they can just be so toxic, though. And
like people have too much time.
People are too willing to throw their name on just racist sentiments, too. It's like, ooh, hoo.
Oh, boy.
And
not great.
Yeah, you know, not great. Not great. But what was great was you, first off, this transition was great.
That was phenomenal.
Don't mean to brag, cut it off for this, but to brag about it. But you got to go to the Coastal Carolina game with Joey Chestnut. This is the second game you've been to this season with Chestnut. First one you got to celebrate after with the home team winning. And you got to go, it was an awesome video where you got to go locker room in with a few of the players, like Silas Kelly and a couple of the others who I'm forgetting right now, and had a little food eating contest to celebrate the win with them. So I'd love to hear about that from you.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny. There was some people trying to write about it after there was a particular article that was written in the Myrtle Beach newspaper, and it was just completely inaccurate about how this all happened. So I appreciate the chance to clarify, but basically, you know, I've been friends with Joey Chestnut a long time, and we have been, Kim and Montoro and I have been trying to put together some sort of food football related thing. And we haven't quite found the right vehicle. So we've been workshopping different things, like the Notre Dame Cincinnati game was fun, but it didn't pan out the way we wanted to from his perspective. Although
it was a Notre Dame home game. So to do the challenge, you had to have the home team win.
Well, no, and not even that, like, because honestly, the post game thing was very specific to Coastal Carolina because they do a celebration after every game. So their coaches approached me about that, and we've been working on that for weeks, but we want to do something special at each school we go to. And I think I'm going to have to deep dive into more unique stuff about, I'm not sure what we would have done at Notre Dame. We were trying to work with the offensive line a little bit because they have, you know, the NIL deal with the barbecue plays and anyways, but neither here nor there. It was an incredible weekend. And from the start, I mean, we get there and we were taken on a tour of the campus and we got to see those bronze statues of the Chanticleers. And we got to see the end of practice. And then we met with Coach Korn, who's offensive coordinator, and he's the one who was the featured coach this week. So each week at Coastal Carolina, a different coach gets to host and come up with the theme for the post game celebration. And it becomes a theme throughout the week. So Coach Korn focused on like eating up the competition, like a hunger for, you know, wins. And like, and they, the whole thing was hot dog, Joey Chestnut themed all week. Like they, they showed the competitions he's been in. I told them to screen the 30 for 30. Like, it was just incredible. So we met with him. We met with his brother, Colton Korn, who is the director of player personnel. He's incredible. And then Jamie Chadwell, the head coach, ambles into the office as we're sitting there. And we just chatted for like 30 minutes. He takes us into his office, and it was incredible because he was the coolest, most down to earth head coach I've ever met. He's amazing. Mm-hmm. And there's a really fun story that I'm actually writing right now that's going to be up on the site this week about an interaction between him and Joey in their office that was very unique. So look forward to that. And then the contest itself was great. The game was not so great. There was a point where it was tied and we were like, uh-oh.
Scared. It was scary.
Yeah. Hard. Because Joey, and he'll kill me for saying this, but when we were in Coach Korn's office, Joey, we're all talking and Joey goes, okay, so like what happens if you guys don't win? And everybody in the room, including myself and Kim, just stopped what we were doing. And we were like, why would you say that? Well, why would you even speak that into an existence, right?
Can't like, bring it up.
Right? And so I was like, Joey, the whole day I was like, Joey, this is your fault that they're tied. This is your fault if they lose. Like, this is on you. But it turned out, you know, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Okay. Sources. It turned out, yeah, my mom's calling me. It turned out it was fine. They won. So we went into the locker room, which it was such an incredible experience, especially for media members. We were not usually allowed in there. Kim was in there shooting it. She got a whole GoPro video that's up on her Instagram. So if you guys want to look at that, it's incredible. And then, yeah, I was positioned right in front. It was the pizza eating contest and they each had to finish a large pizza in 2 minutes. Now nobody finished. Joey did not. He was, I think, one slice shy, which I was surprised. I think if we hadn't gone to the local campus bar the night before, then maybe he would have finished the rest of it.
But he wasn't in training shape.
We definitely went out the night before and it was, there was like Barstool posts about it, like about how he had been at this place called Tongi's. So I think, but he still, you know, he won. And then the next player was Silas Kelly and he actually got very close. Like, I think he was only a couple slices short. He's a very impressive eater. And then it was three players. So Silas Kelly, and then it was Charles Overton, who's the punter. And he's the one that I pushed for because they weren't going to do a special teams guy. And I was like, you have to do a special teams.
Kickers matter too. Yeah,
they do. They're people. So he goes in, and then there was a Trey Carter who was in the middle and he was a lineman and he just did not do very well. And people were,
I saw people commenting online about what's going on with the lineman not keeping up.
Yeah. Not a great representation from him, but honestly, to be fair, you guys, they had no idea that this was happening. They knew Joey was at the game cause it was shown, but the players did not know that they were going to be doing this, that he was even coming in the locker room and they didn't know there'd be an eating component. So these guys walked off the field and tried to eat, you know, pizza in 2 minutes after playing a football game. So, you know, fair is fair to give them that credit, but
yeah, absolutely.
It was incredible. And then we went in the limo with them after the game. So fun, with the players that have the NIL deal, which was cool. And then we went out in Myrtle Beach later. So, it was a heck of a time, Dan.
That's awesome. I'm pretty jealous that you got to do that, but you know, I enjoyed everything from my couch. So,
well, I'm glad. I hope you know, you got to see as much as you wanted, but I'm surprised.
I made the video went viral. Skins. I made new nachos.
Okay. That sounds pretty good.
That's fun.
That sounds good.
It was my,
you got to see more football than I did. I got to see a pretty subpar game between the two teams, to be honest, but
I mean, there wasn't a ton of great games this week across college football, a lot of blowouts because it's that week before rivalry week,
right,
where a lot of big name teams kind of take it off, especially in the SEC. They take it off, whatever, you know. I mean, even in the American, there was like one game I thought that was enjoyable to watch. Like the rest of them were blowouts. If you look across the board,
the ECU Navy game.
Yeah. By far the best game of the week.
Yeah. I think,
like, arguably the best game in all of college football this week, but
I got to tell you, I was very disappointed in SMU this weekend.
Shocked, but not surprised.
Not surprised, but disappointed. Like, come on.
This
guys.
Is exactly
like,
what they did last year against Cincinnati, really? Where they got rolled over. And that was at home for them last year, where they got rolled over.
It's just crazy.
We'll talk about that one. I think I've got that one towards the middle of our games to talk about. Okay. But
well, thank you for letting me wax poetic about the Chanticleers.
Absolutely, because that's awesome. And, you know, go, like, why not wax poetic about it?
It was, everybody should go to a game at Coastal. It was incredible. The environment, like the people, the atmosphere, like the whole town of Conway, South Carolina is so cool. And everybody at the school is still welcoming, you know, and as a female in this industry, that is not always the case. And there's been plenty of places that have been not fun to navigate. People are not helpful, but luckily, you know, I've been fortunate to find some good ones. Colorado State was incredible. And now Coastal Carolina is one that's going to be home for us for a while. So
Absolutely. All right. Mm-hmm. Why don't we get into this slate of AAC games? Because we've got a full week to get through here and mm-hmm. you know, we got power through.
and I'm tired.
yeah. And you're tired. Just got back from South Carolina. You live in the Bay Area. That's yeah. not a quick flight.
No.
I gotcha. All right. So we'll start with the Friday game. That was Memphis 13, Houston 31, the dreaded comb over score. I'll start real quick without it.
Okay.
Donovan Mudon, really scary injury where he had to be taken off on a stretcher in the first half. I heard he was released from the hospital and is doing okay, but it was scary. So I wanted to throw that out there that I heard he was all right. Because it was one of those injuries. 21-3 at the half. Houston was leading the third quarter. Houston got sloppy in this game. Like 8 penalties for something like, I don't have the exact number in front of me, but like 90 plus yards. A couple targeting calls, one of which was taken away, but it was still a late hit. Dana was got himself an unsportsmanlike conduct call, shouting and arguing about targeting. It was real sloppy, and the game got real chippy in the second half. And that kind of losing their focus let Memphis stay around and stay in the game a little bit longer than they should have. McCaskill missed some time in the second half being banged up. But overall, they were still clearly the better team, and that's reflected in the final score where they got their focus back and put on a couple more scores at the end of the game. But yeah, no, this was chippy. It was one of those games where you're reminded, oh yeah, these two teams really don't like each other.
Yeah.
And it's been a few years like this. It slipped my mind how much these two don't like each other.
Mm-hmm. 11 yeah. penalties for 122 yards. That's yeah. wild.
Like I said, like 8 or 9 of those penalties came in the third quarter.
That's insane.
Including Dana, like running onto the field, shouting at refs and like getting the penalty. And like, as they're throwing the flag at him trying to pump up the crowd to get louder, to boo the penalty more and more.
That's wild.
Yeah. Marcus Jones, I think they have 1 or 2 interceptions in this game. And he had at least one. He had at least one because it was a one-handed like interception.
Ooh, I think I did see that. I was in a bar in South Carolina and I made them turn this game on so I could watch it. But I think that was one of the plays that I did see. I didn't get to see the whole thing. Yeah. He had a game though. I'm gonna look
what
and
else
see.
Is new?
Right. 2 interceptions, his fourth straight yep. game with at least one two. Interceptions.
Yeah, I thought it was 2. And yeah, one of them was like a really nice play. But yeah, this game went kind of the exact way I thought would, other than with how chippy it got and Houston losing its focus a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Memphis is in trouble. They've got one more game to win or they're not going to be bowl eligible this year. Now they host Tulane next week. But so we'll see.
Great.
Houston finishes up with UConn next week at home. So the
no worries there.
Yeah, no worries there. We'll talk about UConn a little bit.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Houston should be undefeated right now. I'm going to go back to week mm-hmm. 1. You should not have blown that game to Texas Tech. You were the better team. You're still the better team. I'm still mad they lost that game. Houston, they should in the college football playoff rankings be closer to like between 10 and 15 and not this like 24, maybe we'll rank them nonsense. That's its own other thing. I don't need to get into that too hard right now because we all know just how they are. They don't respect G5 conferences.
Yeah.
They just don't. It is what it is. Houston, really, really good shot to win this conference and go to the New Year's 6 ahead of Cincinnati. Really,
I would love that. I would actually, that would be phenomenal.
And well, we also have to, they do have to rank ahead of UTSA in the final standings, but I think a win over Cincinnati being in the American
would give them that. Yeah.
Even with the loss that I'm assuming you at this point say UTSA goes unbeaten.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, so I think they'd probably hop UTSA, but that's obviously guesswork. They'd have to, I think they already hop San Diego State or they're close to it. Either way. Yeah, all in that boat. Interesting to think about. USF 14, Tulane 45. Tulane blew USF out. They ran them out of the building. You know what the best part is? There was rumors that a bunch of the starters on Tulane were out drinking well into the morning.
First of all, you texted me this. Where did you hear that?
Tulane Twitter. If there's a Tulane Twitter account called Fear the Wave. Pretty good if you're interested in just like a Tulane account to follow. Definitely recommend them. They were talking about, I was like, wait a minute, like what happened? I kind of look it up and it's completely a rumor. I need to throw that out there. Completely a rumor amongst Tulane fans, but some Tulane fans and like students said that they spotted a lot of the players at a bar late into the night and into their hotel morning.
I'll just say this. As somebody who has been around several programs, including one this weekend, it's not uncommon for their college kids. Yeah. So is it right for them to be out nights before games? Probably not.
And you're 1-9?
I mean, you know, they're college kids. So am I surprised? Do I think that they're strict to it? Probably. Mm-hmm. Do I think that a lot of other teams also do the same thing? Yes. Yeah. So to even have that be a rumor that's like circulating is shocking, is dumb, and shows that you don't know anything about college football programs, because this stuff happens. Like, yeah. Kim could tell you stories about Clemson players doing that stuff. Like, it just,
oh no, absolutely. I know it's just that
part of the culture.
I know that, but at the same time, it's just,
it's also something we don't talk about.
Yeah.
We don't talk about it. Like, we know it happens. They're kids. They get that pass. Mm-hmm. Like if they want to do that and like, that's how they want to play their season, and they, you know, whatever. It only matters if you're losing, and that's why people are bringing it up, but they've done it when they've been winning. So, you know.
Well, it's funny because they brought up like with the losing, but then they went out and won big. So maybe we can go back to that bar next week.
will. Michael Pratt getting honor roll honors this week.
About time.
And his triumphant return to the honors.
Michael Pratt got Glenn Spencer fired, the USF defensive coordinator.
Which is crazy because I would not have thought he could get anybody fired. I don't.
Well, Glenn Spencer,
I thought he needed to get. He's going to get his own coordinator fired. That's what I thought.
Well, he might do that too. You never know. But he was hanging on by an absolute thread anyway. Spencer was in South Florida. He was. He just wasn't right for the job. You know, we've talked about a lot this year how USF has shown improvements on offense, but not on defense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you need to start showing improvements on defense. Otherwise, you're not going to win games because you can't give up 28 first quarter points and expect to win. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
Even the offense have struggled for USF. It looked, you know, once they got off script, they struggled a lot. Definitely worth pointing out that sometime towards the middle of this year, Tulane's defense went from liability to asset in a major way. Like a major
around
the Cincinnati game, they swung into being a very good defense.
They were good in the Oklahoma game. People forget, like, they are a good defense. I don't know.
The numbers in the first half didn't say good defense, but the numbers in the second
half. But you had to see some of the things they were doing on the field were mm-hmm. good and competent and showing that there is life and good play here. Mm-hmm. The problem is if your offense goes out and plays terrible and doesn't stay on the field, you can't perform as a defense mm-hmm. consistently. You just can't. No, so
absolutely.
They've always been good. They just didn't get the chance to shine like that until the offense actually got their asses in gear. And by offense, I mean Michael Pratt.
And the offense has still struggled in the past weeks, and the defense has been even better. Like the UCF game, I think that was a 14-10 final. Like that was a mm-hmm. very good defensive effort on the road for them. You know what I mean?
They're good. Like,
they've been, I think, it's a first-year defense coordinator. We talk about Chip Long a lot on this, but it's also a first-year DC there. I think they've come along a lot more on that side of the ball than on the offensive side. Like I said, they've got a chance to ruin Memphis's season next week at the Liberty Bowl. I don't want to say I think it would be funny if they did, but I think it would be funny if they did. You know, just because I think the type of thing's funny sometimes. So I know we should be rooting for as many AAC teams to make a bowl game as possible, to do as well in those as possible, because perception, blah, blah, blah. But come on, who doesn't want to see Tulane end on a little high note there?
I love it. You know I do.
Yeah, USF next week, they have to go to the bounce house, and I think UCF's going to try to drop 50 on them.
I'm pushing big time for one of the players on the offensive line, Corey Dublin. I think he's going to be a big sleeper in this year's draft. He's an extremely, extremely talented lineman who you haven't really gotten to see kind of the breadth of his talent. And he's just a big body guy, but he is just a physical monster. And the way that he handles guys is, I've been watching him for a while, and I think he's going to be a name to watch. So
okay, we'll definitely keep an eye on that for next week's game. I think the best game of the week was pretty clearly ECU 38, Navy 35.
Wild.
This was a great
ECU
game.
What?
Ehlers dominated in this game. Absolutely great game from him. I think he had one throw where I was like, well, that was off target. And it was into the end zone on like a fourth and goal from the one, like on a slant route. No interceptions though. And that's what I've been saying. I really want to see was a clean game from him. He did that. Who had Keaton Mitchell, the ECU running back, going for 1,000 yards this year on their bingo card? Because he's a 1,000-yard rusher.
That's and that incredible.
Snuck up on me.
Like, they've been putting up a lot of points. That, yeah.
Absolutely. You know, and Ty Lavate, who I didn't know if he'd play or not because of the injury in Notre Dame, went. He was very good in this game. You know, AC for Navy was awesome in this game. Like, their offense looked really good and effective. And ECU, whose weakness on defense is the rush defense, really didn't have an answer for the triple. It was a great back and forth game. You know, Ken Niumatalolo briefly got hurt when players rolled up on his leg and he was down.
What?
He got up and finished the game. I don't think there's any like Gus Malzahn type injury, but he was down on the ground on his back for like a couple minutes, like to the point where the trainers on him.
These AAC coaches need to go to the gym and get with the strength trainers. Too many injuries or almost injuries.
You get guys in their mid to late 50s all of a sudden, the knees don't hold up when they get rolled up on the same way.
I am also the same, so I feel that.
Yeah, Mike Houston blew his top two on this.
Really?
Kickoff return for a touchdown by Navy in the fourth quarter. They had thrown a flag in the spot of like a block in the back and picked it up. And they said to pick up the flag. He was angrier than Dana was, but he didn't get penalized for it. He was not happy with that.
When he gets mad, he's scary. No. Like, you do not want to make him. I mean, he's such a nice guy, but he's a big guy though.
Mm-hmm.
He's scary.
I remember like going back to the FCS playoffs a few years ago, like they were showing his pregame speech when he was at James Madison. And he was talking about locking New Hampshire in the door with him. He had these keys with him. He's like, now they're stuck in here with us, and threw the keys at the back of the
room. Oh my God.
They won that game by like 52.
I love him for that. He seems like the kind of guy that could inspire a group of young men through anything. No. So that's why I like him so much.
I really like him too. Yeah. I also really loved Owen Deff for the walk-on kicker hitting a 54-yarder to win the game as time expired and being, you know, carried onto the shoulders of his teammates. And Houston said he had even tried him for like more than like 35 yards in practice. And it was just like a whim to see if he can make it. And he did. So that was a great way to end a great moment. Shane Navy had to lose on senior day, but they'll get a shot at the Army-Navy game to rectify that.
Well, you're talking about their kicker, Owen Daffer. He is the special teams player of the week, obviously, for what you just said.
Yeah.
But I guess it was the longest game winning field goal in program history. It was the second consecutive 12-point performance from him. He went 3 for 3 on field goals from 37, 25, and 54. He also is tied for the conference lead with 17 field goals. So
he's had a good year.
It's been a good year for old Owen over there.
Yeah. ECU's got 7 wins. They have Cincinnati next week, which, you know, we know how that will probably go, but, you know, they're not incapable of, you know, doing a few things that might scare Cincinnati.
Yep.
You know, not to get into the preview podcast early, I don't think it happens because, you know, trying to be realistic about the talent level, Cincinnati's just loaded with talent. But, you know, get to a bowl game, win 8 games this year. That's such an incredibly strong turnaround. And like at the midseason point, I said, I think I'd go Dana for coach of the year in the AAC, but Mike Houston's the other guy. One of the two of them is the clear pick, right?
I like Mike Houston better as a person because Dana. Yeah,
that's fair.
Dana gives me the creeps sometimes, but.
Is it just like the weird haircut?
I've heard stories from people about him, like that are less than savory, but.
And
just the way he talks, like some of the videos they put out on their social, he just comes across as creepy. And I don't know why. Hey,
fair enough. You know, I'm not going to speak to it because I, you know, don't know. So I'm not going to.
Well, but do you get a vibe or no?
I understand where that vibe might be coming from.
There we go. Yeah.
But like I said, 2 hands in the air. I don't know.
Whatever. I'll say it. I don't care.
Well, fair enough. No, definitely either one of them. I think it's deserving. I think it's just a matter of, you know, because they're both turnaround jobs. Which one do you think? I think Mike Houston had the harder job, but obviously he's got more wins and is going to the championship game. So wherever you want to fall on that.
Yeah.
Anyways, Let's talk about one of the two teams that just clinched a spot in the championship game, and that's Cincinnati. SMU 14, Cincinnati 48.
This really was needed SMU to put up more of a fight. Like, this
wasn't a game from the start. Like, no, basically the first two drives, SMU went three and out on, and Cincinnati was scoring, and you're like, oh, well, this is good. It went very similarly to how the UCF Cincinnati game went, where they went in there and the offense struggled early, and Cincinnati got rolling on offense, and all of a sudden the game was put away before you knew what happened.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was, which is great for Cincinnati that they're doing that against UCF and SMU, because more people are watching those games than are watching them struggle in the first half against Tulane, for instance.
Right.
You know what I mean? People see that box score and they go, what's going on? But like, they actually watch this game. I think this is the best way to describe this, is this has happened a couple years in a row where Cincinnati has just dominated SMU. I think Cincinnati is perfectly designed to beat SMU, because they're just littered with NFL talent at corner to lock down SMU's receivers. And then they've got a good enough pass rush that you can't wait for them to get open. You need to make that decision quick. So in that quick man coverage, they don't have the option. And SMU fell behind, so they kind of had to throw, and they just couldn't get it going. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, teams that can run first against Cincinnati can have a little bit of success. You know, that's why Navy had some success, was because Cincinnati is not great at the run game. They're not bad, but they're just, that's what they're average at. They're elite in pass protection, though. You know, they're elite in pass coverage.
Yeah.
So they just, like, they play into Cincinnati's strengths, SMU does. And, you know, it clearly, they couldn't get anything going. Mordecai had 66 yards on the day. You know, it was just
66?
Awful. Yeah, 6-6.
Oh, boy.
It was real bad.
That's like a huge fall from grace for him, because, you know, people were touting that, like,
and Ritter versus... And he dominated UCF, who was a pretty good secondary. Like, that's UCF crazy. Secondary is not nearly as good as Cincinnati's, obviously, but they're young and talented.
Yeah.
Cincinnati's, you know, very experienced and very talented, but like, he dominated last week is my point.
You know what's wild for me in this game is Ritter. So we always go back and forth. Like, obviously Ritter is an incredibly talented quarterback. That's not non-negotiable. Okay. Mm-hmm. We're not saying that, but there's times when I'm not always sold on the amount of potential people are putting on his shoulders. No, right.
Like, he doesn't have as much potential. People talk like NFL quarterback all the time, and I just don't.
I'm like, I don't see it, but I will say this stat from, so obviously he got offensive player of the week honors for the AAC. He had 5 touchdowns, right, for the 3rd consecutive season. Mm-hmm. How does one person throw that many touchdowns like that? Like, I don't care. Even if you're playing the worst teams, to be able to connect that much, it is impressive. So
he's incredibly efficient in that offense. He knows how to run it. Like, it's not the thing. A lot of times their box scores are low because the offense doesn't put any urgency on what it does, especially in the first half. They like to take their time, but it's a lot of RPO game, and Ritter is incredibly good and decisive in it. He knows what read to make. He knows where to go with the ball. I don't love his ability to throw down fielder in the pocket, but in that RPO game, he's excellent, and he's a good enough runner and athlete. In fact, I shouldn't say good enough. He's a very good athlete.
Yeah.
So he runs very well, which adds a whole another dimension that you have to control. I just don't think he's a good enough pocket passer to play, like, to put as much potential as people do, but no, he's incredibly efficient in a great leader in that offensive design.
And here's one you'll enjoy. He tied former South Florida quarterback Quinton Flowers, shout out, for the American Athletic Conference's career record for touchdown responsibility at 112.
Okay. Quinton Flowers.
Touchdown responsibility. That's got to be something you could put on your resume.
That's got to be like when you give like a point guard in the NBA like credit, like if they got 10 assists in a game, give them credit for like 20 points of responsibility.
I love that. Touchdown responsibility is something we should all, I mean, it's a resume item. It's amazing.
Absolutely.
It carries over into life, not just football. So yes, that was my point on this game, is that Desmond Ritter impressed me in a way that he hadn't prior. And that's not saying that he isn't good. Of course he's good. That's not the question, but I have yet to be wowed by him, and this is finally where I'm getting there.
He's not explosive like other quarterbacks. Right. Into wow you are.
Right.
You know, Michigan State lost pretty bad to Ohio State. Oregon went down kind of embarrassingly.
Utah. Somebody said that about Mel Tucker.
I know you did. I hope he's the joke. I know you were at Coastal, but the joke on Twitter was that at halftime he was going to run in and get on his laptop and onto DocuSign to sign the extension there with Michigan State.
Yeah, I think Michigan State's going to regret that big time, but nobody asked me, so.
Nobody did it. I mean, now Florida's open too, so, you know, we got all these jobs to fill. No, what I was getting at
was that
since I was ranked number 5 last week in the college football playoff, a team ranked 7th and a team ranked 3rd both lost. There's a good chance that they'll be in the college football playoff top 4 next week. There's a good chance that Michigan jumps them for the sake of having the team jump them, because that's just how this works sometimes. But I think I'm a huge cynic about them letting Cincinnati in, but I'm starting to let myself get this, like, ooh, they might let an AAC team break that glass ceiling, for lack of a better term, and get into the college football playoff. I'm scared I'm getting my hopes up, and that's all I'll say about it.
Yeah, I think you are, but it's fine.
Well, we'll see what happens as time goes on, because, you know, going back to like the very first college football playoff when TCU was locked in basically, and then conference championship week happened, they didn't play, or they didn't play because the Big 12 didn't have a championship team then, and they got jumped because we had quote unquote more information now, which was silly. And, you know, who knows, they could get jumped at some point because we've got more information now on, say, Notre Dame after they blow out Stanford. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is funny, but like, they don't care. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or we've got more information on Oklahoma State, quote unquote, something like that. anyways, moving on. UConn 17, UCF 49. Immediately, kind of like a lot of the games this week, was over before it started. UCF, you know, scored quick, forced a three and out, forced three interceptions in this game, was scoring on short fields. I don't really want to talk about this game itself because it was just one team overmatched the other, and like no one cares that much about how, you know, that Johnny Richardson had a really big game. Like, you know that he had a big game. Look at the box score. I want to talk about the fact that UCF made a replica civil conflict trophy for the game.
Wait, what?
I want to talk about the fact that UCF made a replica civil conflict trophy for this
game. You know, like, did anybody know about this, or was it
just no, they dropped it on Twitter like a couple hours before the game. So,
oh my God, Dan, do you think they read your article and was
I hope so.
I think so.
So like they dropped it because no one knows where the original is. I assume wherever Bob Diaco exists in his current timeline, but I don't know where he exists right now because he doesn't have a job in college football at the very moment. So like, I can't just look up where Bob Diaco exists. Like he could be anywhere off the grid. But UCF made this trophy and posted onto Twitter like, oh, look what we have, kind of in a joking, but like, you know, promotional thing for the game kind of way. And then people looked in and zoomed on in the verses on the trophy, like where it says verses was in a different font. So everyone's like, it's a fake trophy. And then UConn football's Twitter account tried to dunk on UCF by quoting it and saying, did you find this trophy the same place you found your fake national championship? And I'm thinking to myself, first off, you have one win this year and it's over Yale.
I mean, but you got to admire the spunk.
It was an effort.
Like, they got to do something that you can't get rolled over. Like, good for them for trying to.
It's a replica trophy of your fake trophy. Why are you making fun of it? A fake trophy?
That's true. I mean, if you're going to.
It's a fake trophy of a fake trophy that you create. Like, it's just such a cyclical joke.
Yeah, it didn't make a whole lot of sense.
Anyways, no one partied with the trophy after the game, but a couple more videos of it went up on Twitter of it sitting alone on the bench with the UCF wins in the background. You know, so I think that's the only thing I want to say about this game. Dylan Gabriel, like I said, back at practice. According to Gus Malzahn, he's been sick the past couple of days. He was not specific with what, but he said that makes it unlikely he plays against USF. So that's more of a preview show thing, but for what it's worth. One last game, we'll power through and this one quick too.
Wow, this is like the quickest podcast ever. I'm proud of us.
You know what?
I thought you were going to go wax way more poetic on that game.
I'm telling you, like, I thought about it. And like I said, I could tell you Johnny Richardson had a good day. I could read that. It was a blowout. One team was clearly better. One team in UCF has high 3 stars and low 4 stars on its roster. And then one team's UConn, who lost to lacrosse this year.
UConn, but UConn were you happy? Were you happy with Mikey Keene's stat line in that it was extremely efficient with no interceptions and also barely any, you know, missed attempts?
Yeah, I was happy with Mikey. Mikey Keene has shown a lot of growth over the course of the season. You know, he was Cincinnati on the road to Cincinnati was his second career start. Put that in perspective, how hard that must have been. And he was so overmatched in that game. It wasn't fun to watch. It was just embarrassing. It was like, it was a little sad because he was someone who clearly wasn't ready for the moment. It was a little sad because, you know, Dylan Gabriel is ready for that moment, but obviously was injured for it and couldn't go. And just it kind of took the air out of your sails if you were watching UCF this year and care about how they did.
Yeah.
You know, but he's shown just exponential growth. He has not been perfect by any means. He still looks like a freshman at times, but he has grown a lot. And I think that's exciting for the future.
Yeah.
And I'll say this, UCF is probably going to beat USF next week. I hope by a lot, because that's what, you know, as a, just a rivalry thing, I hope it's by a lot. You know, back, I remember the last, there's a hiatus before they went and joined the AAC together, and USF won that last game of it like 62-17 or something like that. And like really they've made a point of embarrassing UCF
right
when they were in the Big East and UCF was in Conference USA. So I'd like for these next couple years for UCF to return the favor as, you know, a fan, but you know, that's just how it is. But no, UCF is going to be an 8 or 9 win team this year, and that's a pretty good first year with a new staff and massive injury issues, so I'm pretty happy with where UCF got overall. That's all.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Well, I'm glad.
One team I'm not happy with where they're at though is Temple. 10, Tulsa 44. I need to read this off real quick because it's almost unbelievable. Temple hasn't scored a point in the first half since October 23rd against USF. They had 7 points in that game. Or sorry, they had 7 points in that first half, 14 points in that game. This is their first time basically.
I'm upset.
Not scoring. Like I wrote about it in my power rankings. I had a lot of things laid out. Their offense is basically less than 10 points a game in AAC play, with the exception of the Memphis game, you know, which is shockingly bad and shocking that they beat Memphis at this point.
Yeah.
You know, DeJuan Mathis wasn't there because he's transferring. A lot of players have already put their name in the portal.
Well, the wildest thing, though, about Temple, we were talking about the kid that tweeted that stuff?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
About Rod Carey.
Yeah, and about the strength coach as well.
Right, and then there was that video showing the guy had put his picture in this kid's locker.
Yeah.
I am shocked a little bit that there is that kind of stuff going on, and that Rod Carey, that if that turns out to be true, that's going to surprise me a bit, because I had not heard that about him.
It's fundamentally flawed culture stuff, like really, really bad for the culture of the program. Yeah. And like,
which would make sense, right? Because
11 players transferred last season, 7 have already put their name in the portal this season. That's not a good sign.
No,
you know, it's, you know,
but I never thought at the end of the day that it was Rod Carey being that guy. I did not think it was that.
And I say this all the time, to not judge transfers on any like broad spectrum thing. Each case needs to be looked at individually, because why is a kid transferring? Is it playing time that they just don't want to waste their career on the bench and they want to go somewhere where they can play? Is it that the coach misled them about how the program would be run? Is it that the coaching staff changed? Is it that, you know, they, you know, say they're from Florida and they went to go play at Temple in Philadelphia and they said, I can't be this far from home. I need to go back and play at USF, say. You know what I mean? Like, there's a million reasons a kid can transfer.
Of course.
But so that I hate many, when people do like, broad strokes for like transfers. But when you start to see trends of players leaving
and a lot of them, like big groups of people leaving, that's a culture problem.
A lot of people had that concern with Memphis because Silverfield took over and there's a mass exodus of players.
It happened at Stanford. 14 players went into the transfer portal. And I tried to explain to people that there's an issue with the culture with Shaw. Yeah, nobody wants to hear it, but there is. And now we're seeing it at Stanford, that it's a problem.
It absolutely is. Yeah. You know, and this can go for any team, but like, when, don't judge the player on their transfer, but there's, sometimes you can judge the coach on how many transfers are leaving. And right now things are an absolute mess at Temple, absolute mess. And if that's true, the direction of the team, I don't know how you keep Carey another year. because you need to find the money for the buyout is what you need to do. As I've talked about before, money isn't flowing freely at Temple right now.
No.
But like there's people people associated with Temple, not the administration, but like alumni, fans, a lot of them want to leave the American, join the Atlantic 10 for basketball and just try independence out in football because the football program is bad right now. And they culturally are a basketball school, kind of like the way UConn is. And they just want to go play their rivals and try to rebuild basketball and let football figure itself out. And that's such a bad place to find yourself in. They're not a geographic fit for this conference at this point, with Cincinnati leaving, UConn left, and schools coming in are all Southern. I don't know where you go from here. If you're Temple, you've got poor facilities, you've got no stadium to speak of, fans don't show up to your games, you're losing by massive margins. It's just terrible. It's a mess. And they've got one more game, and they're going to lose that game too. I don't know who it's against off the top of my head, but they're going to lose it. I think maybe Navy.
Are you talking about Temple?
Yeah, I think it's Navy.
I think it is Navy too. Let me just click here.
Yeah.
Or Temple. This is not what I wanted for them.
If it is Navy, your last game of the year is going to get run over by the triple option and cup blocking. You're not going to want to be there. It's just, it's miserable.
It's really sad. Yeah, they do play Navy.
Yeah,
but it's at home, so at least it's not at Navy.
So it'll be senior day.
Yeah, which is worse.
Fun.
I'm glad you ended with this game.
I'm sorry. I don't mean to be like a down.
No, I'm glad you ended with it because it is a hard one to talk about. There's not
the
even
game itself. I don't have anything to talk about. Kind of like the UCF UConn game. One team overmatched the other one, and Tulsa hasn't overmatched anyone this year. They couldn't overmatch an FCS school to start the season. Granted, it's a playoff school in FCS level, but they couldn't overmatch them to start the season.
Right.
You know, Tulsa, though, beat SMU next week and you're bowl eligible. That's worth talking about. That's good for them. Mm-hmm. SMU, at the end of the year, has been known to drop games they shouldn't. Say last year, letting ECU score like 60 or whatever that score ended up being. So it's possible that they go out there and beat SMU. I don't think that's, I wouldn't be shocked. They're not the better team, but I wouldn't be shocked. I guess is how I'll leave that for them. Really, really, frankly, boring week of games in the conference. They didn't.
Not our favorite week. Not our favorite. No,
it was a lot of blowouts, unfortunately. You know, not one good game, a lot of blowouts. As far as our records go, I was 5-1. You were 4-2 this week. We both got the USF Tulane game wrong. We were both on the Bulls. We had seen improvement, but then we announced Tulane. We were wrong. Then you had chosen Temple on a gut feeling.
That was before I saw all that stuff on Twitter.
Yeah.
I would not make that choice again going back.
Well, I guess we know who you'll pick next week.
Exactly.
Fair enough. Shout out Don Brown, new head coach at UMass.
There you go. Yeah. I knew it was there.
I was just going to throw it in there real quick.
No, I want to hear your thoughts. Like,
My thoughts are, he's 66 years old, 2 years away from a Mass State pension, has 11 grandchildren living in Massachusetts, and wanted to come home to a school he knew and was the head coach of for 5 years, including a trip to the 2006 FCS championship game.
Which there's nothing wrong with that, right?
No, exactly. It wasn't about the money. It wasn't about the prestige of the job. It's about wanting to come home, and it's a retirement job for him. I believe he wants to win here and has a plan to win here. And when I say here, I mean UMass, obviously.
Of course.
But at the same time, he's in his mid-60s, which at some point age catches up to you. His best years as a defense coordinator are behind him. You saw the downturn at Michigan over time.
Right.
And I don't like retread hires. I've just got a general aversion to them. And at UMass, it's very cyclical. At the FBS level, he's their fourth head coach. They had hired Charlie Molnar, who was the most expensive offense coordinator the least expensive offense coordinator from a Power 5 job they could find. He was at Notre Dame before that. Then that didn't work disastrously. So they brought in Mark Whipple, who was the head coach from 98 to 2003. And he was actually, Don Brown was on his staff at Brown and UMass briefly as well. Won a national championship in 98. And it was to appease Norris. It didn't work. Then they went and got Walt Bell, who was the least expensive offensive coordinator at the Power Five level they could find. He had been at Florida State. Not any success, mind you. Now they're going with the retread that a lot of alumni and boosters like, and that always concerns me. That's just a cyclical thought process to the hirings. Like I said, I think a defensive mind is a good thing for UMass right now, because it's bad on defense. It's real bad.
Yeah.
I think that he'll have a plan. He's got good recruiting ties in the Northeast, and he's good at evaluating talent.
Mm-hmm.
All that matters. I'm just concerned about how much of a retirement job it is for him, because make no mistake, it's a retirement job.
But then don't you think that maybe he's just going to surround himself with good people that like take over? Like he could hopefully build for the future.
He's well respected in the industry. Right. So hopefully
he brings smart.
Hopefully he brings in good coordinators who can get the job done and someone to transition to the future with.
I think that's the best case scenario. Hope.
I will say this. Arizona offered him enough money to make him the highest paid coordinator in the Pac-12, and he turned it down to go to UMass. So take that, Pac-12. Anyways, so yeah,
it's a bad look. The Pac-12 is a dumpster fire, like every year at this time.
You know, bad. That is tough. So yeah, I guess my feelings are, I'll wait and see. I'll be positive about it. I don't like giving grades out to head coaching hires because I think they're disingenuous. That's not the right word, but they're just filler. You know what I mean? So I think there's room to see positive. There's room to see negative. Hopefully it's more positive than bad. But yeah, I wanted to throw that in there because any chance to talk
about it. I wanted to. Okay. So there's your spiel. Here's mine about the Pac-12, because I'm going to talk about the Pac-12 because I'm going to
go for it.
I don't want to talk about the Oregon Utah game. I don't have anything to say. It's
classic Pac-12.
Utah is a good team, and it is hard to play at Rice-Eccles.
They embarrassed Oregon though.
Yeah, I understand. It wasn't great.
If Oregon lost it, that was gonna be 27-24.
Yeah. It's not great. Not scoring through almost three quarters of football is not acceptable for a top ranked team. I will say that. I was the first one to say I thought they were the team, you know, this year. They're not. I was wrong. I get it. Mm-hmm. But that game aside, you look at UCLA dropping 62 points on USC.
Oh, yeah.
Wild.
Beautiful uniforms, though.
Yeah, yes, 100%. I mean, that game, the aesthetic is classic in that game. It's, you know, the battle for LA's soul. We love it. We love to see Chip Kelly winning that game. It makes me happy. So 62. I thought that was a basketball score when I first read it.
When Chip Kelly gets on you, he gets on you to this day.
He's not letting us. See, and I'm not even mad that they dropped 50 because USC had 33. So it wasn't like one of those 62-0, which I would be kind of upset about.
Did you see Dorian Thompson Robinson's unsportsmanlike conduct because a kid handed him a hat to sign and he took it and signed it?
I did see that. Yeah.
Pac-12 refs stay in the way.
It's the worst. We have the worst. They have the worst refs in all of football. And I know everybody says that, but the Pac-12 really does. They do. They win. The other two games that I wanted to say, California beat Stanford for the second year in the row for the Axe, 41-11. And not only that, this was the first time Stanford had had a team break off more than five or six 60-yard runs on them, like 60-yard plays, chunk plays.
Ooh, and you got Kyron Williams coming to town next week.
Oh, it's bad. Oh, it's going to be bad.
Kyron Williams,
I'm going to the game.
It's like a 90-yard rush this year.
Yeah, like, I'm going. My family and I are going as fans, and I'm just expecting just the worst. So
Notre Dame opened as a 17-point favorite. I think
which is
an easy
not enough.
Bet on Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think it's going to be way more than that. Like Stanford, if Cal beats them.
But that means I think Stanford still has a winning record against Brian Kelly at Notre Dame. The early years of Brian Kelly, he could not crack Stanford.
Yeah. Well, that was Harbaugh, but thank God.
Well, it was Harbaugh. It was also Shaw for some time.
No, it was Shaw inheriting what Harbaugh built. And then when Shaw had to build his own thing, this is what happens. This is what we're getting. Anyways, the more interesting game was Oregon State upsetting Arizona State. And I say upset because I think people thought Arizona State would win that game, even though it was in Corvallis. And at Corvallis, another hard place to play, 24-10. Oregon State is 7-4 on the season, 5-3 in the Pac-12. Jonathan Smith is doing things.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but if they beat Oregon next week, they go to the Pac-12 championship game.
You know, I was wondering that. I don't know what the
North. I think it'd be a three-way tie with Washington State, Oregon State, Oregon at that point.
Washington State is 6-5. Okay, 5-3.
Well, they'd have to win the Apple Cup. I'm assuming they'd win the Apple Cup in that.
Yeah, I think so. Because Washington just lost to Colorado 20-17.
But Washington's going to be playing Heward against Washington State. They weren't able to play him because of the redshirt rule. They were going to have to burn it. So that's a quarterback difference. I don't know if that matters to you.
I don't know that it matters for Washington. I did. This is just.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're a mess. Jimmy Leck, to Arizona defensive coordinator.
It's crazy. But you're right. 7-4. So we have a 5-3 Oregon State, a 3-4 Cal, which is too bad because I thought Cal was going to be more of a fight there. And then you have Oregon. But we'll see. But Oregon's at 6-2. In the Pac-12.
But 6-2 would become 6-3 with a loss to Oregon State, who'd be 6-3 then with the tiebreaker.
At okay. Yeah.
That's my thought process.
Yeah.
I don't remember who won.
Where is the Civil War, though? Let's see.
I don't know off the top of my head.
It's at Oregon. I assume
Oregon wins that game.
Yeah. I think it'll be a good game. I think it'll be close, but there's no way that Oregon loses at home after that kind of loss they suffered this week. Just no way.
Yeah.
But what do I know? What does anybody know about the Pac-12, really? So
no one knows anything.
I'm going to go to the Pac-12 championship in Vegas. And
I'm just saying Oregon State, Utah. It's exactly what everyone's predicting.
I would be so thrilled for Jonathan Smith because he is such a good guy. And then he should get coach of the year.
Oregon State.
Well, they'll give it to Witt, but.
Oregon State to the Rose Bowl.
That would just be incredible.
And they can play whoever. It's going to be Wisconsin, isn't it?
The Big Ten.
It's going to be Wisconsin. Wisconsin or Iowa.
Iowa, Oregon State would be interesting. I would watch that.
I think it's going to be Wisconsin at this point, though, unless they lose to Minnesota. I don't know. I don't know the Big Ten.
I think Iowa plays Minnesota. Is it Wisconsin?
Iowa's got Nebraska. Yeah, it's rivalry, so it's Iowa, Nebraska.
Wisconsin has to go to Minnesota, and I could see PJ Fleck throwing some crazy. He's known.
It's a big rivalry game, yeah.
Yeah, but he's known for his unorthodox play calling sometimes. So. Mm-hmm. Could we see a little craziness in that game? Yeah, I think that's one to watch for sure. So
I'm old enough to remember when he lost to Bowling Green. All right.
I'm sure he wishes that you didn't. So.
A lot of people wish you didn't remember losing to Bowling Green.
I bet.
All right.
All right.
I don't have anything else. Do you have anything else for this?
That was it. I just wanted to give the Pac-12 some love.
Get it off the chest.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so we'll be back a little bit later, probably recording pretty soon because of Thanksgiving for the previews for this week.
I'm looking forward to the preview
show a little bit more than this show, to be honest. So stay tuned for that.
Absolutely.
And we're off.
But don't forget to follow Dan on Twitter.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Dan _Morrison96 on Twitter.
And follow me on Twitter and Instagram @MLNem, and we will see you next time for the preview.
All right, now we're off.